Welcome to day 28 of our UFC 100 mega coverage audio here on MMATorch.com. I'm Torch editor Jamie Pennick, joined once again by Torch columnist Matt Pelkey. And today we're going to round out our ramifications discussions from UFC 100 and discuss the final two bouts from the main card that we haven't touched on yet and where these four guys go from here. So we had the two bouts we're talking about, Matt. We've got John Fitch defeating Paulo Thiago by decision, and then Yoshihiro Akiyama taking a hotly contested and hotly debated split decision over Alan Belcher in the UFC 100 fight of the night. Obviously, Akiyama made his UFC debut with that fight, and Alan Belcher gave himself a good enough showing to have a large group of people thinking that he won that fight. So neither guy lost a whole lot here, and in this UFC middleweight division, if you're not Anderson Silva, you're kind of fair game right now. What do you see coming up next for the Japanese superstar Akiyama and Alan Belcher, who showed himself to be an impressive force and someone to be reckoned with at 185?
I tell you what I would like to see for Akiyama. I would like to see him try to make the weight cut and go down to 170. It was a very entertaining fight. But Alan Belcher isn't exactly the elite of the middleweight division, and he gave Akiyama absolutely everything he could handle. I agreed with you. I had Akiyama winning the first two rounds and Belcher winning that third, so I wasn't among those who thought he got robbed. But he looked an absolute full weight class smaller than Belcher. We didn't really get to see his ground game, which is better, even better than his stand-up, which looked pretty good. I thought he was getting the better of a lot, most of the stand-up exchanges in the fight. I would love to see him drop down to 170 and face any number of people, but assuming, you know, he's probably not comfortable making the weight cut, you know, cutting weight I almost feel is more of an American trait because a lot of guys grew up as, like, high school wrestlers, so they've been doing it all their lives. The Japanese guys, I mean, weight classes in Japan aren't exactly the most important aspect of fighting over there, so nobody's really used to cutting weight, so I doubt we'll see him do that. Maybe it's going to take him getting out-muscled by somebody and beaten down for that to happen. But who knows? Maybe he'll surprise me and he'll just keep winning. Obviously, he has, you know, he's going to have a very large fan base. He's going to constantly be bringing the Japanese and Korean media to events that he's fighting at, kind of the same way that the Japanese pitchers do in baseball. So I think he's always going to have a spot on the card, maybe even a little higher than he deserves. But let's not forget this guy is a top 10 middleweight in the world, so he's fair game for anybody. You know, maybe a fight with Michael Bisping when he's ready to go would be exciting. As far as Belcher, he's basically a gatekeeper. He's a very talented one, hence the nickname. But he's just going to be kind of a measuring stick to see if you're ready to go past. I don't really know what I'd like to see for him. Maybe match him up with a debuting exciting fighter or something and either let that guy prove himself or let Belcher get a well-deserved win under his belt.
I want to touch on the weight-cutting thing that you discussed, because I think definitely if Akiyama could make that 170-pound weight limit, he could be a force at 170, I mean, for sure. He's a guy that matches up in size well with George St. Pierre. He was made to look small by Alan Belcher because his walking around weight is closer to the 185, 190, and obviously Belcher is much taller and looked it on Saturday night. But the thing is, he's got a lot of things that he can do, Alan Belcher, and has a lot of talent, like we said, thus the nickname. But he still hasn't faced top tier competition, because for as good as Akiyama is, we can't call him really top tier over here in the U.S. yet, because we haven't seen what he can do against those top tier guys. We can't see what he can do against the highest level in that the UFC has to offer in either the middleweight or welterweight division. But Belcher, at the same time, I can see why a lot of people thought he won that fight. He did a lot of damage with the leg kicks. He messed up Akiyama's eye. But what a lot of people were overlooking were the counterpunching of Akiyama and the responses to those leg kicks that he had in the first and second round. And the second round, which he clearly won, but the first round was the one that was really the most contested, because I think Belcher won the third round, although one of the esteemed judges didn't see it that way. And I think that's what had people more up in arms than anything, is how someone could score that 30-27 for Akiyama, because I have a hard time seeing that. But despite taking a really bad low blow and having a miscommunication with the translation and not realizing that he had 5 full minutes to recover, he tried to rush it back out there, and maybe before he was ready to go, it may have affected him the rest of that fight. The fact of the matter is, though, he picked up a win in his Octagon debut, and there are a lot of good things left for Yoshihiro Akiyama in the UFC, and I think there's definitely a bright future for him in the UFC. I think the cut to welterweight would make a hell of a lot of sense, because he's going to be undersized against almost every single middleweight he faces. But Alan Belcher, I think you can put him up. I'm trying to think of a middleweight that makes sense for him right now, because while he lost, he didn't lose a whole lot, and I think he can still match up well with a lot of the guys that the UFC has to offer. I think maybe about with Kendall Grove later, just depending on what Kendall does in his upcoming fight. Yushin Okami might not be a bad opponent for Belcher to test just how far he has come along in the UFC. There's a lot of different guys that are possibilities, but he's kind of in that middle part of the division where really it's any number of guys that can match up with him, and it's just a matter of what Joe Silva decides to do.
Yeah, I was actually thinking a name that popped into my head that I think would make sense for either guy, and would be a heck of a fun fight, would be Patrick Cote when he's ready to come back. They're, you know, all three of those guys are basically, I would say, kind of on even footing as far as they're standing in the middleweight division right now. You know, B-plus, maybe, but not quite the top tier. And I think maybe either of those guys matching up with Patrick Cote and getting a win would certainly solidify them in my eyes as being ready to make that jump up to the upper echelon of the division.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good name to throw out there, because, again, he's another guy that really was questionable putting in a title shot against Silva. Same thing with Talisaitis, both very questionable names for title shots, but they got there and were completely outclassed. So they're not at the top of the division, despite getting the title shots. And I think, like you said, Patrick Cote would match up good with either Akiyama or Alan Belcher. That'd be one of those middleweights that's not going to completely tower over. I mean, Yoshihiro Akiyama. So that's one of those middleweight bouts that would make sense for him. I think Akiyama's going to have trouble when he gets up against the bigger middleweights, because he's naturally looking around, looks like he walks around about 190, 195 max. And so you've got some of these, like you talked about, it's the U.S. thing with the wrestling and coming up, and really started with Tito Ortiz here in the U.S. cutting down for MMA. And it's you're going to have a lot of guys that are walking around 215, 220, cutting down to 185. Maybe not a lot of guys sitting up at that high of a level, but there's still going to be a lot of guys walking around between 200 and 215 that are still going to be having a large size advantage over a guy like Yoshihiro Akiyama. So I'm definitely in the camp with you that I think a move down to welterweight would be a great idea, because he can jump right in there with that whole number 2 down to number 12 division, where everyone's kind of in the mix there under the banner that is George St. Pierre at the top of that division.
Yeah, I think as far as the bigger guys in the middleweight division, you know, you got guys like like Chael Sonnen and Nate Marquardt and Ben Henderson, all guys that, you know, have fought a higher weight and cut down from well over 200 pounds. And not only did they cut down from that size, they cut down because they're wrestlers naturally. And having that size advantage matched up with their wrestling advantage would negate the one advantage that Akiyama has over everybody else that he'll fight, which would be his judo. You know, it's certainly a guy that's as good at judo as Akiyama is could still find ways to toss guys on their heads, but when you're going up against high-level wrestlers, that's really just going to take away the one advantage that he has.
Yeah, I mean, clearly for these guys, there's lots of options available. So we'll have to see what Joe Silva and the UFC set up for them going forward. We'll move over to John Fitch and Paulo Thiago. We've talked about John Fitch a little bit this week already in response to Thiago Alves and the fact that he's up there as 2A and 2B with Thiago Alves under George St. Pierre, as both of them got into their title fights with George St. Pierre and were impressive in the fact that they held on to the end. I mean, they weren't able to do a whole lot, either guy, in different facets of the game. Obviously, John Fitch took a lot more abuse than Thiago Alves did, but he was also allowed more freedom to do something to St. Pierre, whereas Alves was completely snuffed out at UFC 100. But the impressive thing with Paulo Thiago in this fight, because he was definitely against a guy that was clearly a level above him, maybe two levels above him in John Fitch, but he proved that his ground game is no joke from a defensive standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, and in multiple submission attempts on John Fitch. But Fitch was just far too good for him in this fight, but I was very impressed by Paulo Thiago's performance and the fact that we were able to see one of the things that he was highly touted about coming into his UFC debut against Josh Koscheck, and that was his ground game, and it was an impressive defensive performance with Fitch kind of trying to grind him out in the second and third round.
Well, for the people that happened to stick around and watch that fight after the main event, and I'm guessing it wasn't nearly as many people that would have watched it had that fight gone on, you know, first on the card. I would think that Paulo Thiago gained more respect in that defeat than he did in his knockout win over Josh Koscheck. You know, that win was a fight that he was losing and then caught an uppercut and got a flash knockdown that, you know, I think most people agree that Koscheck probably should have been given an extra second or two to see if he could recover, kind of a controversial stoppage there. But that's certainly a big win under his belt. But I feel like the loss to Fitch was more impressive because he proved that he could hang three full rounds with an elite fighter in the division. Obviously, after fighting Josh Koscheck and John Fitch in your first two fights, UFC isn't exactly trying to protect this guy. So he's pretty much fair game for anybody. I would like to see him with a slight step down next time out, just to at least give the guy a chance to breathe in the octagon and maybe show what he can do without getting smothered by a guy like John Fitch. I really think the only two names that are off limits to him right now are Anthony Johnson and Dan Hardy. You know, two guys who are known more for their striking and are certainly guys that the UFC will want to market and probably won't want a guy like Paulo Thiago tying up in knots before they're ready to face a guy of his level. I would certainly love to see him matched up with, you know, a guy like Marcus Davis or, you know, a Matt Brown, something like that. Somebody that's proven themselves to be a decent, durable fighter, but not a world beater. So throwing Paulo Thiago in there against two basically top five welterweights in the world in your first two fights, I mean, throw the guy a bone, give him another shot, see if he can impress against slightly lesser competition.
Yeah, I think definitely if you take someone that's, say, eighth ranked or below in the UFC's welterweight division, you've got plenty of matchups that would make sense for Thiago and would really work to allow him to show what he can do and allow him to kind of build up from the bottom up, well, not the bottom up, but from the middle up and gradually increase his competition, because he was definitely thrown right into the deep end, taking on Josh Koscheck and really getting he was getting outworked on the feet before he before Koscheck got sloppy and got caught. And then John Fitch, again, just he's the number two guy in the welterweight division along with Thiago Alves, and to take him in your second UFC fight, I mean, it's impressive that he lasted to the end.
Yeah, I think as far as John Fitch goes, we've obviously talked about before with Thiago Alves that that's really the one fight that makes sense for both of those guys right now. The timing really matches up, and it'll be an eliminator fight for who gets to stay in the title hunt for maybe a rematch with George St. Pierre, maybe an interim title match should George St. Pierre decide to leave the welterweight division behind. But one thing as far as John Fitch goes that I wouldn't mind seeing, and I would hate to lose him as a UFC fighter, but maybe once his contract runs out, he could sign with a company like Strikeforce, maybe be featured a little more prominently, add some depth to their very thin 170-pound division. I mean, just with the guys they have there, I would love to see matchups with, you know, Joe Riggs or Nick Diaz, and especially against Jake Shields, kind of a matchup that I've been wanting to see for a couple of years now.
Yeah, that's would not be a terrible thing at all. Although I'm sure we'd all definitely like to see him on the big stage and continuing to fight the guys that the UFC has to offer. So, I mean, really, again, both of these fights were good on the main card at UFC 100, and all four guys have a lot of things going forward for them, as even in losses, Thiago and Belcher didn't lose a whole lot because they were able to do a lot themselves. So a lot of stuff going on in the welterweight and middleweight divisions outside of the champions. I mean, lots of things lining up for challengers and for challenger fights and matchups that are mid-tier to top-tier. And really, there's just a lot of stuff going forward and a lot of matchups that we can be excited for, because we're going to see a lot of great fights still in the coming year.
Yeah, it's both two very good fights, these two in particular, because they were so evenly matched and so close that nobody really was the loser, even though they lost, you know, with Belcher and Thiago. Both, I think, gained something in their losses. So they really need to take advantage next time out and get an impressive win while everybody still has UFC 100 fresh on their minds. These are four guys who obviously aren't out of the discussion for a title shot somewhere down the road in any way. And there's a lot of, literally all four guys, you can basically match them up with anybody, and you'll get a worthwhile fight.
Yeah. All right, Matt, that's a good place to stop this conversation. It's another good one to wrap up our ramifications this week. So thank you for joining me once again. We'll be back tomorrow with more audio here on the VIP site for MMATorch.com. So thanks for joining us, and for Matt Pelkey, this is Jamie Penick signing off.